Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the last session of today. Thanks for coming. My name is Ed Monroe, one of the regional liaisons with the office, and I want to introduce the panel here for voter notification. Starting off with Brian Law Liberator. Did I get that right?
Law Liberty.
Law Liberty. I knew I was going to mess that up, but with attorney with Baker and Hostetler. Jane Platten, director of the Cuyahoga County Board of Elections. Peg Rosenfield, election specialist with the League of Women Voters. And Jacqueline Rush, who our elections assistance administrator with the Ohio Secretary of State's office. Just want to start off with opening comments from our panel. And I guess, Peg, if we could start off with you here.
I didn't know I got to be first. I do hope we've got election officials, and I see we do some, because I really want to hear your reactions to what all we say. My feeling is that this ought to be a lot easier. If we have somebody who made some kind of a little technical mistake on an absentee ballot or the ID envelope or a provisional ballot or the ID envelope, a lot of these mistakes are somebody didn't do something in the right place, or you know, they signed it but they didn't print their name under it or whatever. You ought to be able to call them up and say, "Hey George, you goofed up. What did you really mean to say here?" And then you fill it in and it's fine. None of this calling them up and telling them to come in, and they have to come in while I can't come in. Just fix it. If it's a really important, I mean, I don't see how you can sign somebody else's name, but if they just didn't fill something in properly or the poll worker forgot to fill it in, just fix it. But perhaps the attorneys may want to say something different.
Thanks, Peg. Jane, opening comments?
Voter notification. The one thing that I wanted to talk about is we had 7,400 provisional ballots that were rejected in the 2008 November election. We sent out just over 7,000 letters to people. We started this practice about 2007 to try and get people to register if they went and voted provisional because they weren't registered, send them a registration card. Out of 7,000 plus letters that we sent, 48 people called us to fix their record. So my next step is to recommend to the board to cease and desist that practice. We do that for for absentees information as well, when we have notice that folks are, you know, filling something out wrong or not, or missing information. We can't and shouldn't be expending the resources for programs like that that don't work. I sat in the provisional ballot forum just now, and there was this angst almost, you could cut the tension with a knife in some of the areas of discussion between the official election officials and the academics and lawyers, and that's got to stop, and it's going to stop when we finally figure out a way to notify voters and actually have them react to the information that we're requesting and give us what they need. I do think that voter notification, obviously we send a gazillion pieces of mail and literature to people by law that we have to. Maybe now is a good time, a quiet time, to streamline some of those laws that require us to spend a whole lot of money to send a whole lot of voters who aren't going to give a hill of beans about that piece of mail that they're getting from the Board of Elections.
Thank you, Jane. Jacqueline?
Good afternoon, everyone. I want to thank you all for attending this afternoon. It's great to see election officials as well as our General Assembly members as well as advocates here so that you can hear our concerns and our issues that we have when we do have to send out notification to registered voters throughout the state. One thing I wanted to bring up first, I had worked at a county board of elections for over 15 years, a small rural county. It's very different from Cuyahoga counties in how we would notify people. Those of you that come from a small county, you might be able just to pick up your phone book and you might know them as your neighbor or a family member even, where Jane, she would have to rely on different means of notifying the voters themselves. Talking about going from different years of elections, starting in 2000, the then Secretary of State sent out 34 directives and 10 advisories. And in 2004, Secretary of State Blackwell sent out 60 directives with 8 advisories. And with this last presidential election, Secretary Bruner, as those of you that worked last year and you're aware of, we had sent out 122 directives and 34 advisories. And over half of those directives and advisories dealt with procedures and policies that we've asked boards of elections, trying to give you best practices on how to do certain procedures. And one of them was notifications of provisional balloting and absentee ballots. Now, it's very difficult from an administrator from the state level to say one size fits all, because it doesn't. And hopefully we'll be able to hear your comments and issues, and we'll be able to take those back and implement those into directives and advisories that will work best for you. And hopefully the General Assembly will hear your concerns as well and be able to enact some laws that we all can deal with.
Thank you. And Brian?
Thanks, Ed. I'd like to open just by saying that in the last 2 years, we have seen a tremendous paradigm shift in the state of Ohio in how we administer elections. And that is in large measure due to how Secretary Bruner and her staff have moved positive reforms forward that I think balance local needs against the overall desire to make sure that votes count. But it's also in large measure your success as county boards of elections, administrators, officials, and members, because you're taking the direction from the state, you're meshing them with local needs, and you're running effective elections. I sat in the Ohio Democratic Party's boiler room on election day in 2006, and we were busy. We were busy for 12 hours straight. I sat in the operations center for the Obama campaign this last fall, and after a certain point in the day, there were only probably 4 counties statewide that we considered hotspots. And so that is a vastly different scenario just in 2 years that we're dealing with from a campaign standpoint. And I have to tell you, it's very, very encouraging. In my mind, you know, with respect to voter notification, the main thing is votes have to be counted. And the trick is figuring out, again, how we balance the resources we have against what I think we all want to see, and that's to make sure that the franchise is protected at all costs. And so I too, from a campaign perspective and from an election lawyer perspective, I'd really like to hear the thoughts of the audience and my fellow panelists about how we can really come up with a common sense system that's cost effective for our local elections officials, but has a bias toward making sure that all votes are counted.
Thanks, Brian. Well, I thought we had some really good opening comments, and it sounds like our panel I think we really want to hear from the floor too. So I'm just curious to know, to start off with, if there's any comments from the floor anyone would like to make. Sure. Yeah. Please. Please. Your name, and then also affiliation, county.
Yes. Brian Daly, Summit County Board of Election board member.
Okay. Thanks, Brian.
One of the panelists indicated that it might make sense to simplify the process by calling people and making minor changes over the phone. My concern is that once you start down that slippery slope, it could be a real problem. And I'd like to get feedback on these comments, but if we were to do that, how do we know that we're talking to the right party on the other end of the line? How do we know that we're not going to have board workers just making minor changes on their own? Because why bother with the telephone call? As I said at the outset, my concern is that we're starting down a slippery slope if we do something like that. But I'd be interested to hear comments on my call.
Okay, would anyone like to?
I'm the one who raised the possibility, and I guess what I'm saying is this is one way of fixing it easily. You have a DNR sitting there together doing the phone calls, and you pick up the phone and you say, "Hi, is this Peg Rosenfield?" "Yes." "What's your birth date?" "It isn't today." And you can fix it with the two people. It isn't the only way to do it. I grew up in a very small rural county in Iowa, and literally everybody knew everybody. And so in a county like that, you can do things very informally. I agree, in Cuyahoga County, you probably can't do it exactly the same way. It'd be overwhelming. But I like the idea that Jane had it in an earlier form of another part of this is simplifying the forms so that people don't make these stupid mistakes. If they're done with usability, they did it, you highlight the things that people absolutely have to fill in on the absentee stuff. If it's stuff that they're filling out at a polling place, it's up to the poll workers to make sure they fill it out right. If it ain't filled out right at the polls, it's not the voters' fault. They're not supposed to be the experts. So I just think that we've made it way too complicated. That there should be much simpler ways of making sure people fill in. They only ask them what you really need to have and make clear, well, you have to have this, we'd like to have this, but if you didn't fill this other part in, that's okay. And keep it, KISS, keep it simple, stupid, and fix it in common sense ways, not very complicated bureaucratic ways.
We had 271,000 ballots cast absentee. Out of those, at the end of the day, 5,620 were not counted because of technicalities or mistakes that folks made. They didn't fill it out correctly. Out of 5,600, we had to not count ballots because 2,924 of them, almost 3,000 of the 5,600, didn't have the ballot in the envelope. In the March election, my staff would see that, and they would take that ballot and they would put it into the envelope and they would seal it up for the voter and they would put it as a good ballot in to be counted. In November, I wasn't allowed to do that based on some court end results from Lucas County, and we had now a directive that we're not allowed to put the ballot in the ID envelope for the voter. 3,000 votes not counted as a result of that. That, I think, is something that an election official who takes an oath to be an election official of integrity, we have DNR teams, that is something that can be fixed at the Board of Elections level without even having to make a call to the voter. I'll tell you what right now, if my 79-year-old father got a phone call from an employee of mine saying, "You didn't put your ballot in the envelope, is it okay if I put the ballot in the envelope, Mr. Platten?" That would confuse him more than I think is necessary. So we should be able to make some election administrative decisions, such as putting that ballot in the envelope that's totally filled out correctly. And I think that there are some phone calls that can be made. We did make phone calls up until the point we got the directive to say we're not allowed to anymore. So it just would make it, a lot easier. And I can tell you that if there's any staff person that takes the liberty to make changes or do something that they shouldn't, where the voter hasn't given them permission to do that, then that person should, obviously not be working in the capacity of that position. They take an oath.
Jacqueline O'Brien?
I think it would just be exceedingly rare. Again, I agree with Jane to have any Board of Elections worker do anything that would be untoward, especially when you're working in DNR teams. But I think maybe we can go back to more of a fundamental issue with the form. I mean, if you pull your driver's license out of your pocket and take a look at it, there are two numbers on the front of that driver's license. There's the license number that begins with usually two leading letters, and then there's a number over your big picture. And I can't tell you how many meetings we had to have about which number works to validate your ID for the purposes of an absent voter ballot or provisional voter ballot. And we went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And you wouldn't believe how many people are confused. I mean, every time I go to vote early, because I work on election day for campaigns, I stand there in the booth, and I look at the envelope, and I have to put my thumb over the number that I shouldn't use and write in the driver's license number. And it's not that I don't want to use the last four of my Social Security number. It's just I'm a belt and suspenders guy, so I usually write the last four of my Social Security number, and then I write the driver's license number to make sure. I mean, I'm a lawyer, you know. I'm not necessarily the smartest guy, but I'm not the dumbest either, and I get confused standing there before Election Day. And so I think if we go back to the touchstone of the signature, the birth date, last four of the SOCH, and forget this business about the driver's license, maybe that is a way to streamline the process a little bit. And again, I know we're not here to talk about voter ID, but again, I think if we reduce the barriers, reduce artificial barriers that didn't exist for how many years we've been conducting elections in this state and country, we'll be a lot better off, and we'll be adhering, I think, more to the concept of enfranchising people rather than disenfranchising them. Because the instances of fraud are so low. I mean, there really isn't that much voter fraud going on, intentional voter fraud, where people actually go in and maliciously do something to try to influence the outcome of an election. There just isn't any evidentiary support to back that up. And so maybe if we just get back to the basics and stop worrying about the straw man of voter fraud, we'd be encouraging more people to come to the polls, and a lot more votes would be counted without some of the artificial issues getting in the way.
Great. Well, thanks, everyone, for the comments and everything. Jane, I thought your comments kind of made a nice segue into the first question with the easing the ability to count absentee and provisional ballots with technical deficiencies. Voters, like all people, can make mistakes on these simple and complex government forms. Of course, in 2008, our office issued Directive 2008-109, allowed voters to be notified of errors and correct them. But the question, how can we best implement processes for voters to be notified of absentee and provisional ballot errors and to correct those errors? So I'm just curious from the panel, anyone would like to just jump in right there? And
it was stated that we should simplify the forms, and I agree. A lot of times, election officials, they have a prescribed form from the Secretary of State's office, and they have to be beholden to that. A lot of times we do get requests from counties saying, can you look over this new form that we have revamped using everything that's in the code? And we would review that, and an administrator and a legal person, and be able to tell them, yes, you can use this form, or no, you cannot. Keeping it simple, as Peg would say, I think we need to redesign the forms. And with that notion, we don't need to just allow election administrators or lawyers and the Secretary of State's office. I think we should open that up to election officials, let voters see it. That means, advocates and so forth. This last year, we had a security work group that consisted of Secretary of State officials as well as the association members, and we worked together to come together to get an end product, which was all the security measures that come out last year in the directive form. So I think if we simplify the form, that is the best thing to do, but we all need to work together so that the voters understand. The voters in each area of the state, they might be different reading levels or knowledge levels, and I think we need to simplify all of them so that everyone throughout the state can use them.
Yes, yes.
Thanks, Jake.
Years ago, somebody told me, when you're designing forms, don't show them to the lawyers. They'll put them in legalese. No one will understand them.
Well, Peg, we do have to follow the law.
Well, I know, but the lawyers don't speak English. sorry. And don't just show it to people who work in elections, because you understand already what's going on. They said, if you're going to show a form to somebody, show it to the janitor. Ask him if he understands what he's supposed to do. Now, I think that's actually very useful. The other one is there are usability experts. And they're the people who ought to look at it, the people who know how to design forms. It should be on a reading level of probably fourth grade, maybe sixth grade tops. Many forms, they've checked the forms used in lots of government offices, and most of them are at the level where you need 2 years of graduate school to be able to understand them. That's not acceptable. You don't have to have a graduate degree to vote. It's probably okay to require you to have a fourth grade reading level. But are we checking all our forms to make sure that somebody with a fourth grade reading level understands what they have to do and how to do it? And I think the answer is no. They're confusing. Now, if they the question is also, how do we correct it? And I think what we're saying is we shouldn't have to correct it. We shouldn't have to notify voters that you made a mistake. If the things are designed reasonably well, you won't have 3,000 problems. You may have 13. And if you have 13, you probably can call them. I mean, I think we're going at curing the disease that we should be preventing, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Anyone else from the...
I've seen the Secretary's website actually has some fairly effective slides on there that will walk you through, and not necessarily on the absentee or provisional ballot forms, but I know there's a really good slide on ID and explaining the various numbers and what works and what doesn't work. And I think a large component of making sure that you know, we have simplification on one hand, but we also have voter education on the other. And a lot of that education has to come from local boards of election. And the Secretary certainly can prescribe educational materials by directive or otherwise, but there has to be a way to sort of step by step walk somebody through how to fill things out properly, you know, pictorially, in as few words as possible to really make sure that they understand what it is the form asks for and where to put it and what to do. And you know, I've seen that used in certain counties. I've seen it on the Secretary's website. I've actually seen the campaigns doing it, you know, in their targeted mailings to the voters, just to make absolutely sure that there's no question about what information is necessary and to fill out the forms correctly. So I think, you know, you have simplification on one hand, but you have education on the other. And I'd be really curious to find out if other, you know, folks in the audience have ideas about how we can better educate voters at the same time we're trying to streamline the forms and perhaps change the law to reduce the barriers to voting a valid absentee or provisional ballot.
Thanks, Brian. It looks, before we go to Florida, I think Jane has a comment.
Just real quick, after the March election, I had a woman write a letter. She's the former director of literacy program in Cleveland Reads. And she told me in this letter, in no uncertain terms, and not in very nice, you know, it wasn't very complimentary, that my absentee brochure that we send a brochure with an absentee ballot that explains how to vote the ballot and how to fill out the ID envelope and such. And she essentially said, you stink at putting a pamphlet that's going to teach someone how to to fill out the ballot and put it in the envelope correctly and such. So between March and November, I contacted her, and we worked with her, and she helped us develop our pamphlet to show people how to vote the ballot and fill out the ID envelope and get it in the ID envelope and mail it off. And she did the readability and readable scale testing on it, and it was very helpful. We highlight the needed information on all of our forms now, registration forms. We went from 2006, a rejection rate of 5.7% of all cards that came in had missing information. We didn't reject them, obviously we went and tried to get that information from those people, but 5.7% of all cards in 2006 had missing information so that we couldn't have them be fully registered voters until we got it. In 2008, that percentage, after we started highlighting in 2007, went down to 1.38%. Only 1.38% of our registration cards now come in with missing information because we highlighted everything in yellow. There are ways to do it. We put boxes, the exact number of boxes for that driver's license number that it needs to be. We put on there alpha number. So we've really tried to hone in on the mistakes that were being made and how do we correct them. Now, you can change all of the forms that you want. You can try and make it easier for voters to understand. But until laws such as the provisional law are changed, to better reflect how a human being can understand them. You know, that's an area that I feel strongly about, and I don't think that you're going to be able to create a form. We've tried for 4 years now.
Thanks, Jane. And a comment from the floor, ma'am?
Yes, I'm Mickey Smith from Butler County, and I just had a suggestion. I know a lot of the issue comes in on the absentee envelope having the date wrong. You know, they're putting today's date instead of their birth date. And instead of having to have that person come into the office and make the change, which is a hardship for an elderly person or a person who has a handicap and such, why couldn't we just make a copy of the envelope, highlight the mistake, and have them an area that they could sign so when they fix the mistake, we can tell when it comes back in the mail it's them because we can compare the signature. Why do they have to come into the office? I think something needs to be changed there.
Right. Sure. And I think, you know, kind of looking at the second question and everything, creating the better laws and so the unimportant, you know, those kind of a lot of election officials looking at some errors that are just, it seems so ridiculous that they can't go ahead and just do the last task for the voter. And again, talking about enfranchisement and everything, being able to count that vote at that point, going into, I guess, creating better laws there. But Brian, it looks like you might have a question or a comment.
Both. The comment is, Brian Williams, Summit County. The comment is a couple of observations. First, as to the last question that was asked, the directive that allowed us to make changes or achieve changes on a voter absentee voter application that came out said that boards may do this and should do it by policy and be obviously even-handed in their implementation. In Summit County, we do it all by mail, specifically, and we highlight the area that's missing. We photocopy the deficient application, highlight the missing area in yellow, as Jane was saying, and mail it back to the voter, and we get very good, very appreciative mailback rates, and so we don't have to worry about knowing phone numbers or emails or anything else like that because we're dealing with the voter address, and that works great until you get to the deadline. And then we are mailing out on deadlines things highlighted with deficiencies just because we go to the last, our staff doesn't decide a cutoff. So it works great until you get to the deadline, and that means basically people with incomplete stuff at the deadline run a greater risk of not being able to finish the voting via absentee voting. They can always go to the polls if they miss out on the absentee voting. But we found in Summit County, we had a college student called in, requested a change to their absentee application in a primary going back, not March, but the previous September primary. We have a September primary of 2007. And the clerk was authorized to make the change for the student who called in from Michigan. And the sum and substance of it was it got fussed about and pushed up to the board level. They fussed and fought, referred it to the prosecutor. Some were seeking a prosecution for the director that authorized the clerk to make the red pencil change on the application. The prosecutor came back and told us under Ohio law, you can't touch any of that stuff, and you can't do any of that for them. I would think unless there's a legal change, you're gonna have a hard time letting a government employee make the change for them and the call in. Plus, finding them is next to impossible via telephone, particularly in the bigger counties. Here's my question. And I agree also 1,000% to Jacqueline, that's been said now in two sessions that I've been in, the quality of the layout of the forms is essential. The absentee application and the Form 12A beg for mistakes and omissions. I think the state's voter registration card begs for omissions too. And there, the Secretary of State's office does have the authority to design these forms with the help of a graphics artist who's going to put them through the usability studies, dish them out to the counties to use. We don't have the authority to change those forms. The forms we have the authority to change, we do just that in Summit County. But those are things that could be changed to the Secretary without any legislative changes. And we can get, while we're still fussing about legislative changes, we can get a higher degree of performance in terms of completeness. And I strongly echo everything that was said here and in a previous session about the value of spending some time and money at the state level to create a form that is user-friendly. We know the areas they most forget. Those are the ones that need to be most stressed. But nonetheless, here's my question. little bit different of a twist, but I think we're talking about voter notification. I don't know if the panel have any direct knowledge. Maybe this is just a question for some direction. We finished doing our third voter notification on the identification law. That was done in November. We no longer have to do them. But we flagged all of the books all along with this return 10K notice, which is the voter notification. My read of the statute is that it's silent. My question is, is there a sunset on that flag for the purpose of the voter notification, or do boards of elections still have to continue into the future flagging the books that we had returned mail as a result of the return 10K, which was the voter notification, or can we deflag our future registration books as a result? Was it sunsetted? It's a legal question that we've yet to get direction on, but we have elections. We have, in Summit County, a May election we're preparing for. I'm sure others are as well.
Jacqueline, did you?
As an administrator, I love saying this, I defer to the attorneys. I will take your question back unless Brian has any knowledge of that. I don't want to put any of our attorneys that's here on the spot, so we can get back to you.
I can give you the perspective from the campaigns. On election day, we run into red flags, black flags, skulls and crossbones, little ticking time bombs, you name it. There's a symbol for it on a poll book somewhere in Ohio. And I say that partly in jest, but partly it's true. And I can't tell you how much consternation those flags cause campaigns on election day. My understanding, and I certainly am not trying to give you legal advice or try to overstep the secretary's authority by any means, but there is a specific protocol to follow under the revised code, and I think it has to mesh with what HAVA and the NVRA say about what those flags mean. Because my understanding is those flags then could lead to a purge of that voter. And so I think once a voter is flagged, then there's a timetable that has to be followed after that. And I think the trigger is the next federal election, if I'm not mistaken. Next two, Peg's right, that's right, the next two federal elections. So, and if they're flagged, then I think that person also has to bring a current address, a valid photo ID with their current address on it, because if the notice was returned as undeliverable. So there are a couple of different triggers in there. One is, I think, an ID requirement, and then you get two elections after that before you can be purged. But there is a statute on it, and it does mesh with federal law.
Wouldn't that be the, it could trigger the NVRA?
That's right.
The question, do these return notices trigger the list maintenance process prescribed under the NVRA?
I would think
it
could.
If they do, the obvious, there is a sunset to it. That's two federal generals after you've notified
right.
them that they've been their list maintenance. But it's not clear to me in the statute that this type of, because remember, this voter notification was unique to Ohio. The acknowledgement of registration that's required under NVRA, the Form 10J that we use in Ohio, has a parallel.
Yeah, I mean that's my understanding. Is that's how it is tied. And again, I don't know that. I mean, that's my position as an advocate. I could make an argument that it should be tied, but I don't know for a fact. Just because I think the presumption needs to be in favor of keeping somebody on the polls, and then of course if they do show up once their name has been flagged with a current ID, then the flag comes off.
Well, the assumption if you're trying to err on the side of keeping the voter on the polls, then you remove the flag and never apply the list maintenance.
Well, thanks, Brian. I appreciate that. Working with voter notification, and again, concentrating on things like absentee ballots, provisional ballots that have come back with some kind of missing information on there. I think in the morning session, Jane had mentioned, having to call her mother because the envelope wasn't licked closed and different things like that, deficiencies. Where it's just seems so terrible that there is things in statute and everything where the voter actually has to come down and do that personally, and looking at some of the laws and everything, to better protect the voters, enfranchisement and voting and everything, without compromising security. Again, different ideas and I guess situations where boards of elections are dealing with such a problem or can see solutions possibly that would help you guys do your work and everything. So I wanted to open up again to the panel if anybody wanted to offhand. Brian?
Sure, I'll throw this out. Oh, we have a question for the audience, but I'm interested in the experience on the panel and also in the room with, we talked about simplifying the form, we talked about a little bit about education, and what effort has been made to educate the poll workers about how to assist people with provisional ballot forms at the polling location?
What's this lady got?
Yeah, I guess we have a comment from the floor, too. Or I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. Carol Ann Hill from Ottawa County. And sorry to kind of sidetrack you, but I'm back on the absentee ballot envelopes. When they come in and we notice a potentially fatal error, we notify the individual voter by mail, phone, email, whatever works. But as we go forward and improve our process, how can we be sure that we don't, and this is probably a very bad word, but we don't discriminate against the absentee voter who's working out of the county for the 2 weeks, or the absentee voter who may be in Florida or Arizona, where we wished we were. How can we be sure that we're treating every individual voter the same? Because the person who's in the county and voted early, they can come into the Board of Elections and they can fix the potential mistake. But the person that's working, their job has sent them somewhere else, it's a true hardship for them to get back in that window. How can we address that moving forward?
One of the things that we did in Cuyahoga County, and whether it was somebody working out of state and we were able to contact them or they called us based on a piece of mail, or it's a disabled person who just can't get down to the board, we suspended their original ballot in many cases and then reissued them another one. The problem with that is those, again, as Brian mentioned, once you get close to the deadline of election day, it was very difficult to get their attention and get them a new ballot. But we did suspend a lot of original ballots and reissue as a result of that.
And that would work until we still got a gap.
It's a Band-Aid solution, to a problem that's increasingly becoming more common.
It's the kind of thing, when I worked in the Secretary of State's office and I got the problem voter registrations, that were anything from somebody didn't sign it to, today's date's my birthday. And that's when I picked up the phone and called them and said, I've got your registration. Today is the last day of registration. Get to a library now and do another voter registration, or you're not going to vote in this election. You don't have time to fix this one. It's hopeless. Get to a library now and fix it. And that seemed to be very effective. In the first place, they were stunned that anybody from a state office called them. And in the second place, I put on my teacher voice. And
that one works. I've used that one before.
It's very effective.
But, and that works for registration, but when it's their actual envelope.
Yeah, you're right. And there comes a point where you probably can't fix it. And that's why I say we have to prevent the disease when we can't cure it. And it's totally frustrating when you hit one of these, but I'm ready to admit we can't solve every problem. But one of the things that we can talk about is getting some of this sorted out legislatively. The problem with the provisional forms, they're hopeless. They're four-part forms. They're just incredible.
incredibly more complicated than they need to be. And we're going to get them filled out properly if we can get the legislature, please, to simplify the form and what's needed. And then it will be easier for the poll workers and the voters and the Board of Elections to deal with it.
Thanks, Peggy.
Can I add something?
Yeah, please.
Just to throw something out as a shock factor, maybe, because we've discussed notifying voters of things that are missing on their forms and or envelopes by phone and mail. What about internet or fax machines?
Sure. You got them.
It looks like, Mike, you have a question?
Yeah, Mike DeFranco from Cuyahoga County. My question is, and this is going to go back to a legislation change. On the absentee application, we verify all the information we need for the voter then. Why are we then putting them in a double jeopardy, as it may, with checking their return ballot and asking for the same information? We check signatures to verify that voter is the correct voter against registration. I think Jane will attest, we check hundreds of thousands of signatures on petitions every year, and we take for granted that those people's signatures are their signature to match their registration. Why can't we take that signature on their absentee ballot and say, this is that person, let's put their ballot in their envelope and count it?
Please do come to the ID one tomorrow. Beats me.
Right, and I don't know, Jacqueline, it's a little bit.
I'm gonna go out on a limb here.
Thanks, Brian.
Being the advocate and being the campaign lawyer, in 2005, the legislature was considering House Bill 3. And I've looked at this all over the country. There was a concerted effort, and I don't mean to offend my Republican friends, but there was a concerted effort led by the National Republican Party to implement voting laws across the country that made it harder for people to vote, period. Absentee, provisional, at the polling place, period. They made it harder. House Bill 3 is a confounding mess. I spent 3 months trying to understand that thing and figure out what was wrong with it. I succeeded in a couple cases, and we're still working on a few more that are hanging out there. It's a mess. It is probably one of the best examples of poor legislative drafting you could ever point to in the history of the state. I mean, it's not written in plain English. It's not written in any sensible fashion whatsoever. It makes it impossible for even some of the best lawyers and minds in this state to unravel. And you know, it was all part of a concerted effort to make it harder for people to vote, period. So I think we really need to go back to the drawing board and say, what works, what has worked, what will work, how do we run a good, secure election without putting artificial barriers in place to voting?
Representative Stewart?
Dan Stewart, House of Representatives here in Franklin County. I appreciate all the comments, and I agree with Peg that I think probably simplification might be one of the ways to go at it. I think, the only original no vote on House Bill 3 because of many of the concerns, in fact, Brian, what you brought up. I was concerned about, for the boards, the cost of mailing out. There are a lot of reasons mail gets returned. You know, I had some folks who had a wild a dog that attacked the mailman. He stopped delivering for a month. You know, I mean, there are a lot of reasons. And I was worried about the cost and that you've got, you know, you don't have the same kind of requirements for the folks who show up in person, and it's just a signature, and nobody's a signature expert. We look at it and say, okay, that's the same. The simplification seems to make work. But so does uniformity. I mean, it seems like we had the case here in Franklin County where the outside provisional ballots were different, envelopes were different than in other counties, they had more information, that caused lengthier lawsuits and delay in the congressional races. What other suggestions? I mean, is it poll worker training? Is it? Because what it concerns me from what you said, Director, is that we worry, and we should be concerned about voter fraud, but we might have a handful of those where we are missing thousands of people who votes aren't going to count. And that's what I know everybody cares about who does this for a living. You want to run a great election and have everybody's vote count, whether you're Republican or Democrat. That's true. So, I mean, nobody seems to make a big deal out of that, though. I mean, we worry that we may have five or six voter frauds or voter registration frauds, But there are thousands potentially, if I'm hearing you right, that for whatever reason, maybe the forms were coming. And you know what? A little difference from my colleague earlier today at lunch. People, if they are citizens of this state and are qualified voters, I don't care what grade they made it through. I think their vote should count. That's democracy. We gave up the education test a long time ago, you know? So am I missing that? Am I overstating that there are thousands of people at times that may not because of these things? And are there other ideas, whether it's poll worker training or just the unification and simplification of forms?
Got no argument here. All of the above.
Director, am I right? Is there
There are. I mean, in Cuyahoga County, we rejected 7,400 provisional ballots total. Just under half of those were because the person wasn't registered. And then another 3,000 an odd number, some were voting in the wrong precinct. One of the things that, I have struggled for 2 years now as director, trying to figure out how do we best educate poll workers and voters how to handle a provisional ballot. On the voter side, it's voter education in terms of check your registration prior to election day and do the preventive measures that way with voters. Poll workers, it's educating them on, number one, understanding why and when a person should be voting a provisional ballot. One of the things that we did was we took the provisional ballot envelope process out of the precinct table and we put together what's called a voter assistance table. So if I went into the polling location and I wasn't in the poll book, that poll worker tells the voter, go over here to the voter assistance table. We did it for a couple reasons, and notwithstanding the reason that if you had a long line, that person was cogging up that precinct for a long period of time. So we removed that from that precinct table. For the November 2008 election, we specifically targeted the legal community in Cuyahoga County to hire lawyers to sit at that voter assistance table and help people fill out their provisional ballot. And we were successful in some precincts, obviously not all, but what we also did was we targeted those precincts that we knew were vulnerable at the onset for issues. We did a map and colored the map in terms of a high number of provisional votes being rejected due to error or whatever the issue was. And there's this, we call it the boomerang, and it goes from upper east side of Cuyahoga County down through the middle of the city proper and then down under Euclid. And so there's this boomerang that we know had some vulnerable locations, so we really targeted those areas. Poll worker education materials, we totally dismantled and rebuilt them, particularly around the provisional balloting issue. We've tried a lot of different things. We've seen some success. The one thing that is just drives me crazy that we have not seen we've seen some lower of the number, but people going into the right location and voting in the wrong precinct. And the reason, I don't know why that is happening. They go and they get their provisional ballot envelope. The poll worker has written on that envelope the exact correct precinct that voter should be walking over to get their ballot, and they still have the wrong precinct or ballot in there. So we have some work to do on that, but there's some, we've really tried to be creative in our thinking on how to do this, but.
Well, I like your ideas. In any input you want to give the legislature, we'll accept about the form designs. I mean, we do seem to have the guys who, lay out the instructions for putting your home stereo component, case cabinet together that, takes you for 8 hours to do those forms, but maybe we need, some of the simplistic, and certainly welcome any other ideas that folks have.
Right. Anyone else from the panel? Or Jane, I thought those were some great comments, and I know we have, people from other boards here, and I was wondering if, other boards, any strategies that you guys use, similarities?
My name is Tippi Slaughter, and I'm with Butler County. And we focused on our provisional errors and improving in that area quite a bit. In 2006, we found that we had 20% of our provisionals that were incorrect due to poll worker error. So we decided that we would start targeting those areas. So we did much like what you said, Jane, and targeting the areas where we had those problems. And what we did was we started recruiting poll workers in those areas and looking at the demographics of our poll workers so that we could get some different people in, maybe with different backgrounds, that might bring a different perspective as a poll worker. So we sent out a direct mailing recruiting new workers with a lot of success, brought them into training, and did a focus on that in our training. We did role playing. We had them fill out 6 provisional envelopes themselves, and then their partner would have to check it. We gave them examples of, you know, we gave them a stack, and they had to check them and pick out what was wrong. So we tested them to see, you know, if they could identify the errors on the, we intentionally made mistakes on them and see, to see if they could pick those out. We've also reworked our street directory. And what we did with that was we took the street directory and we listed all on one, we made it longer and we put on the next to the street and the address exactly what polling location and what precinct that the voter should be in. So that if a voter presented themselves and they weren't supposed to be there, that the poll worker could at one shot look at that street directory and then fill out a card and tell that voter where to go to vote in the correct precinct. That's worked really well for us, you know, between, you know, those three things. We were able to reduce our poll worker errors on provisionals down to 6% in this last election in that category of voting in the wrong precinct. So those are just some ideas, you know, that I could share that we've found success in.
Wow, great. Thank you very much. Anyone else as far as other counties or anything like that want to share any other things that they're doing? One of the things that I kind of found interesting, we've talked about streamlining the paperwork and everything, I've heard a lot about just voters these days are information overload. It's, you know, going to the polls on election day, you know, there's as far as forms that they're filling out, and also just kind of pre-election day too. The amount of information that possibly is coming at them. And I was just wondering if anybody from the panel or the audience, as far as that kind of, you know, possibly felt maybe there's too many forms that people are mailing out as far as that's required, or any questions or comments as far as that.
You know, I think what I find is, and I bet you, Brian, you probably think have some ideas on this, is it's not so much voter, it's not so much overload of forms as it is. Sometimes I get frustrated because we come upon a major election and the message has to be certain to the dynamics of what's going on in the world at that point, whether it's provisional ballots or whether it's vote by mail or it's bring your identification. In 2006, it was bring your ID. It was here's how to vote on a touchscreen machine in Cuyahoga County at the time. Here's this message. And it's almost like message overload, just going from election to election. In November March of 08 for Cuyahoga County, it was, you know, don't exit, don't check it, fill it in, don't circle it, fill it in. And so then that moved to how do I stick that ballot into a precinct scanner. So it's message overload, I think, sometimes for Board of Elections officials to try and figure out what should I be telling the voter today.
Right. Thanks, Jane.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Just a question to the board people. I have people who tell me, I don't think I ever got that notification or whatever it is, because it gets lost with, particularly in campaign season, where campaigns send out literature that look like official publications. And is there any way that we could make all election official things look official? That I know they have a little wavy flag thing, that you can use and the post office is supposed to recognize, but it's not very noticeable. And it's very easy for your absentee ballot to get lost in the junk mail. Is there any way anybody's figured out to make it show up so that, by golly, you know, this is an official thing that's from your board of election? I just don't know.
Thanks for the question. Any comments or anything? Brian, sure.
Just to the previous point, it is an issue from time to time. The voters getting information from campaigns and elections from the local media, particularly talk radio, where a caller will call in and start the ball rolling about urban legends as they relate to provisional ballots, more importantly, absentee ballots. So they are getting information that contradicts what we try and put out there. And then there is the message of the month issue, as Jane mentioned, that creates additional challenges. And plus, we've been in a since we've converted systems, there's a lot of new stuff for the voters to do over the past 4 years. But it is a challenge. We had the McCain campaign sent out a form. It caused lawsuits over where a box was checked. And so, you know, in 2004, we had people filing newspapers, running registration cards in the newspaper. People would cut them out and fill them in and send them into the Board of Elections. Boards of Elections, under a directive from the Secretary of State, saying, don't take it because it's not on 90-pound paper. Had all the information. So we had the media trying, and this was all over the state, but in our area, it was the Plain Dealer did it once, I think in 2003. You had them trying to help, and they were making the matters worse. And then you had the technical. So, yes, that is a challenge for us. Is there a solution to it? Getting candidates who are enthusiastic about getting their message out to their targeted audience is always going to be a challenge. Talk radio is always going to push certain things. I don't think there is a solution other than screaming louder than them when we hear it. You know, the loudest voice wins. And we try and reply. But with regard to, Peg, your last comment, which is on the issue of dealing with that information, this might sound apocryphal, but I was, and I guess it is, but what I tell people is the best way to vote and make certain that your ballot doesn't count is to vote absentee. And people look at you and they say, what do you mean? When you vote absentee versus going to the polls on election day, you're creating, and I sat down to make a list and I stopped at around 20, you're creating more than 20 points of failure that can exist, that can't exist, or don't exist when the person goes to vote on election day. So while absentee voting is a great service to someone who's going to be out of county, who can't get to the polls, it's a great feature that shouldn't go away. It's also a great feature that is fraught with, you send in your application, the postman can fail you. The Board of Elections can lose the application. You fill it incomplete, so we send it back, the postman can fail you again when we send it back to you. Then you fill it in and complete it and send it back, the postman can fail you again, we can lose it again. Then we process it, but we can process it wrong by sending you the wrong ballot, although typically that happens very low rate of fail, you know, that's a low problem, but it could happen. Then you fill it out. And then your spouse gets a ballot, and you use your spouse's envelope, and you switch crisscross. Or you don't put the ballot back in the envelope and seal it. You fill out the Form 12A, the front of the envelope, but you don't put the ballot in and seal it. As Jane mentioned, we get hundreds of those in a big election. We get hundreds that we have to disqualify. Voting absentee creates more than two dozen. I could probably have put the test, come up with 50 ways that your ballot wouldn't count if you vote than if you had gone to the polls. So while absentee voting is a great thing, particularly by mail for those who have difficulties getting to the polls on election day, it is, in my view, an overused alternative to voting at the polls, which is what the system is well designed to handle and can handle. For us in Summit County, and I think this is true across the state, absentee voting is tenfold more expensive than processing a voter at the polls on election day. So all of the money that we spend in Summit County was probably more than $1 million in 2008 to process the absentee voters both walk in and by mail. All those, that's money that could be spent perfecting the system elsewhere, but can't because we're facilitating people who want the ballot of convenience, which is also the ballot of highest failure rate. And even more so, I would, well, we're matching provisional. That's my two cents.
Okay. Well, thank you, Brian. And I think...
I was just going to say that the campaigns are very sensitive to confusing voters, and there is a lot of research time put into finding out what the targeted county boards of election are doing to educate voters so that the campaign materials that are prepared are not inconsistent. You know, maybe the campaign materials explain it a little differently, but the campaigns that I've been involved in have taken really great pains to make sure that the materials are consistent with the Secretary of State's materials, consistent with a county's materials, and really do accurately reflect what Ohio law requires of voters who are voting absentee or who are going to the polls and who need to bring ID and things like that. So I think, you know, the campaigns are incredibly sophisticated. They really do focus on what the county boards are doing, and they really do focus on what the Secretary is prescribing. They really try to be constructive. You know, the Ohio lawyers and the Ohio volunteers who are involved are always trying to make sure that the folks who come here from out of state understand that, you know, we have a good Secretary of State, we have boards of election who really want to do the right thing, but are navigating a very complex legal environment in doing that. And so the campaigns are very sensitive to how difficult your jobs are and how difficult the Secretary's job is, and really try to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And I think all the absentee information or communications from boards should be in a very flat orange envelope and then solve everything. Day-glow orange.
Day-glow orange.
Day-glow
there
orange.
We go.
Okay. Day-glow orange. Well, I think we're about running out of time here, so I just wanted to see any final comments from the panel here. Or, Jacqueline?
The last question on the flyer was, how can we create laws that are better protect voters who make unimportant errors without compromising election security? Well, we as election officials don't make the laws, but we can work with, the association can work with their legislative committee in approaching the ones that do make the laws. And we ourselves as citizens and voters, we can go to our representatives and say, you need to look at this law. So how do we create laws? We go to the lawmakers and we make that change.
Jane or Peg?
Okay. Well, I just was sitting here thinking, you know, I've had to argue with my own kids. Yes, they really do count all the absentee ballots.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you the number of times I've said to people, no, no, they count the absentee ballots first. Oh, really? And I mean, I can't believe I've been arguing this with people for 30 years. And that legend is still out there that we don't count the absentees unless it's a close election.
Well, on that note, I want to thank our panel and also the audience here. I thought it was a good discussion, and I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your conference.